Yo, what's up, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Across the Pitch. Myself, Dave Miller, and Jose Nunez to my left. And of course, we're also joined by a very special guest here today with Mario Amaya. Mario, welcome to the show. Just first off, if you'd like to give a little introduction of yourself, what you do, what you specialize in, just to, you know, give our listeners a good idea of what you're all about.
All right. So my name is Mario Amaya. I'm a freelance writer for El Tiempo Latino, and I cover DC United. So a lot of my coverage involves just following the team, writing game recaps. And also I have a podcast called the Bad Hombres FC podcast, which focuses mainly on DC United and the Washington Spirit of the NWSL.
Ah, awesome. So, of course, when did you actually get into, you know, covering DC United, and how did sort of your coverage of the team and, as you mentioned, the NWSL as well, how did that all come about?
So originally it started, like, I feel like everybody else that goes into this, you start out as a fan. I've been a DC United fan since I was a kid, since 1996. So it was something that came naturally to me. I'd officially started writing for El Tiempo Latino in 2020. So that's when my coverage first started for DC United. I also had various jobs within the club as well. So DC United's been always something that's always gone hand in hand in life. And now I now just get to cover the team, which is probably the enjoyable part of all of this. Also with the Washington Spirit, it kind of just started a couple years ago as well. I've been more of a casual, like, women's soccer fan. So for me, getting to cover both teams it's pretty interesting, because you do get to see two different perspectives. One from a standpoint of covering a men's team, and one from a standpoint of covering a women's team.
Awesome. And of course, as you sort of said, there's a very bit of a contrast as well in terms of, you know, covering the women's team and covering the covering the men's team. So what have you found, you know, covering the NWSL, perhaps a league that isn't as well known or on a global scale, especially? How would you sort of describe the NWSL, and what is there for people who are perhaps interested, not just nationally in the United States, but perhaps internationally as well, that are hoping to broaden the horizons surrounding the women's game?
I think if you go into it, the games are a lot more competitive. Not saying that MLS isn't competitive. Obviously, MLS is a very competitive league, but NWSL is also a very competitive league. Games are really tight, and they're really entertaining to watch. And also, you have the caveat that you get to see a lot of your favorite women's national team players, such as an Ashley Sanchez or Trinity Rodman in this case, or Andy Sullivan, three players that were on the roster for the last World Cup. Sophia Smith, who is a young, exciting talent coming up in NWSL, or has already arrived as being one of the top players for the U.S. women's national team as well. And of course, you get your veterans such as veteran faces like Megan Rapinoe and Alex Morgan. So you get to see a really high level of soccer being played. And also, it's very fun to watch. And hey, I got to give credit. That will give you highlights for days.
Yeah, I was going to say, obviously, I think, again, the United States women's team has been pretty much the face of women's football, or soccer, as you guys call it, for, crikey, about the last, like, 20 years now. I mean, they've dominated on the global stage with the women's game, especially. I mean, again, as you said, there was a great advert there, just saying that, like, the amount of talent, the great players there are, and as you sort of said, it's highlights for days, I'm sure, very end-to-end, very competitive. And we just had the Women's World Cup as well, which ended on Sunday. Unfortunately, England couldn't beat Spain, but I think it's been a good, especially it was great to see the women's game continuing to grow and continue to flourish, especially on that global stage that we've had for the past month and a half with the Women's World Cup.
Dave, were you big sad when the Lionesses lost?
I mean, it was unfortunate to see them lose. I mean, they worked so hard to get to the final, and yeah, the penny just didn't drop their way, unfortunately. I mean, they couldn't take their chances.
And also, it has to be said, I think Spain was one of the best teams throughout the tournament. So it could, honestly, that final could have gone either way. Yeah. I think England did their thing throughout the whole tournament. They were pretty solid, but Spain was just a better team on the day.
Maybe before Yeah, before we transition to Leagues Cup, I just want to say, you know, the fact that Mario's here today is it's just an absolute result of just how easy it is to network and connect with people, right? I met Mario and the happenstance. Dave and Mike certainly know this, that, you know, I was in Washington, D.C. for a work trip and sort of last minute emailed the D.C. United press people and said, hey, I'm in town. I've been covering the Union and here are my contacts and here's some of my stuff. And they're like, oh, absolutely. Come in. It was the Pumas and Querétaro match out in D.C.
Right. It was packed that day, you know,
all 200 people that were in the stands. Right. So, I ended up meeting Mario there. And you know, we've been connecting over the last couple of weeks in terms of text messaging one another, sort of content and questions and whatnot. And again, I think it just goes to show just how this league is making it really, really easy to get in touch with others, right? And sort of talk about what you're passionate about, which for you and I, Dave and Mike, is the Philadelphia Union. And for Mario, unfortunately, it's DC.
Hey, man, you got to put respect on DC's name a little bit. We're 4-time MLS Cup champions, good sir.
all due to my Bolivian counterpart. So, yeah, no, I totally get it.
Hey, man, you got to pay homage to Marco Echeverri and Jaime Moreno, man.
Yeah,
I was around these parts.
I was so happy to see that Marco got the under 15 job this week and posted a lot of really weird selfie videos that he tends to do. So, but maybe this is a good cue for us, Dave, to maybe start thinking about the Leagues Cup right now that it's all wrapped up and Mario's DC talk is a little bit shorter than ours as we obviously finished in third place.
Yeah, I was going to say. I mean, of course, the Leagues Cup, it was I think depending how you looked at it, it was quite a contentious tournament, I think, especially from a Mexican perspective, which I totally understand. I think the tournament probably was extremely underwhelming, to put it lightly, for them. I think, again, the amount of traveling, the issues with travel, I think, was it Leon who had issues, traveling from Vancouver? I think one of the games got pushed back due to like them essentially being stuck at the airport for like 24 hours to get travel.
Yeah, it was Leon. I think they were having issues traveling from Vancouver to Seattle.
Yeah.
And also, you got to think about it. Like, I think for Monterrey, they had to travel pretty far throughout this tournament. So, for a lot of the Liga MX teams, it's traveling from one point of the country to another just to play these games. It kind of takes a toll on you.
Yeah, I asked Miguel Herrera when he was here with Tijuana, and here, I mean, Philadelphia and Chester. And, you know, he was very clear. After the first match, he was a little bit fired up about the refereeing and whatnot. But then after the second match, their loss to Querétaro, which obviously meant, I think, that they were just absolutely done, right? Like, that was it. They were packing up. He was very quick to say, you know, just how unfair and difficult this was for Mexican teams. And rightfully so. You know, I think Dave and I have sort of talked about this in terms of if the Union or honestly many of these MLS teams were to go and play a, you know, second leg or a game in Mexico, I know for a fact, or I shouldn't say I know for a fact, but I have a pretty strong feeling that the Philadelphia Union would fold like a chair coming, you know, if they're up 1-0 out in a Mexican spot and having to hold that lead. I just don't see that happening. So it's really fascinating to see just how this whole thing was tilted, but obviously we know the financial side of things being that I think the Mexican teams probably gained a heck of a lot more than the United States that the American teams did in terms of, again, growing the game, growing their brand, growing their notoriety around here, and maybe even giving their fans an opportunity who have, I hate to use the word defected, like it's Cuba, but, you know, moved away from Mexico, and now they can go and watch their teams or watch a team that they're, you know, maybe reminiscent of when they were in Mexico.
Right. I think that's one of the things that's interesting about this Leagues Cup is for a lot of Mexican fans that are in this country, it gives them an opportunity to see their team from Mexico play here in the States. So I think that's one of the interesting parts is you get to see the interaction between both Liga MX and MLS fans. And I think the financial side is I think both leagues end up gaining a lot here, because there's a lot of money involved in this, obviously. But I think for the players, I think that just the wear and tear of just traveling kind of takes a toll on you.
Yeah, I think, like, you play a tournament for an entire month, you know, well, longer than a month for some teams, and you sort of away from your families. You know, you've just started your league season. You've been probably been away from your families for a month there as well, doing pre-season, focusing on getting ready and fit, and then you're already being, you know, shifted away to another country. It takes a toll on the team, as you sort of alluded to there. But I mean, for you guys, is there a situation or a way that you think that for next year, whenever the next league, the addition of the League's Cup occurs, do you think, is there a solution or a way that they could perhaps, you know, work around this? Perhaps, you know, playing the games in Mexico, or if it's, you know, home, you know, if you're drawn at home, you play at home in America. But if you play a Mexican team away, you have to travel away. How do you guys think you could perhaps work around these clear growing pains and growing issues that we've somewhat seen?
I think just concentrate the team. Like, if you're playing a group, say, for example, DC United, Philadelphia, and Monterrey, for example, are playing in the same group. I think just concentrate them in that particular, like, region between Philadelphia and DC. That way, travel would be a little less, because it's only a two-hour drive between DC and Philadelphia. It takes less of a toll. But obviously, these are just kinks that MLS has to work out and figure out moving forward with the tournament. But that could be a solution. I guess playing in Mexico as well would probably be, having some of these games being played in Mexico would be a solution as well. It's just also, it would be the reverse. It would take a toll on MLS teams traveling down to Mexico for your traveling down south. And then you're pretty much just trying to figure out how you work out the logistics. So that's two things in particular I think MLS can work on going forward with the League's Cup.
I think, you know, one thought I had is, you know, and this kind of goes back to Wayne Rooney's comment leading into the Union match, in terms of, you know, seating and you know, where do you put who and where, and in terms of, you know, positioning, and obviously it was all based, at least on the MLS side, based on last year's performance and where they landed on you know, like, in the league. But it would be interesting to see, you know, like, the top five Mexican teams, they host regionally, and the top five MLS teams or whatever host regionally in their area as well. And then you have a mix of Mexican and American teams. I don't know, just throwing some other stuff in there. And even, you know, Fernando Ortiz of Monterrey was very open about being willing to, you know, he appreciated the tournament. He understood the assignment. And he was saying, you know, he mentioned, you know, logistically, I think there's things that need to be ironed out, but this remains a very interesting competition for us, and one that I would forever take not lightly. So I think he sort of gets the idea, right, that this is a tournament that's here to stay. And we heard it from Jim Curtin. I don't know if Wayne Rooney ever mentioned it to you guys, Mario, out there, in terms of, you know, one of the incentives that's really keeping the players, you know, enticed, despite adding valuable minutes to their bodies on our end. And this is all coming from Todd Lewis over at the Free Kick Pod, you know, folks, players like Lesnes and some other bodies that have already this year surpassed the total minutes that they had last year. And we're just going into the last 11 games of the MLS. But I'm not sure if Wayne ever commented in terms of the financial side of things, where, you know, the incentive for players to play and you know, make money off of this.
You know, the funny thing is, Wayne, I don't think, if memory serves me well, I don't think Wayne ever mentioned the financial side of this tournament. He mentioned a lot more of the keeping the minutes aspect of it all, because he did rotate from the Montreal game. He rested several starters. I know Benteke was starting off on the bench in the Pumas game. So pretty much just for him, it was keeping players healthy, keeping the rotations players fresh, and just keeping on minutes total throughout the tournament. That's the vibe I got from Wayne most of the part throughout the tournament. And also, Wayne Rooney didn't coach the first game against Montreal because he had gone down with a flu-like illness, so he couldn't fly to Montreal. So you kind of got his assistant Pete Shuttleworth to talk to us a little bit. And so that was an interesting part. But I think both of them were kind of in sync on keeping players rested, keeping players healthy throughout the tournament, and not overworking minutes, in particular in the striker position. because Christian Benteke is one of those players that have had a lot of minutes throughout the season. So you kind of wanted to avoid wear and tear. That was mostly what you got off of Wade Rudy. He spoke less about the financial stuff and more of on the field play.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's obviously quite interesting. Obviously, Wayne's comments before the tournament, which I think, Jose, you brought some attention to, was regarding the seeding issue. And as you mentioned there, beforehand, perhaps changing up the system, seeding system, to perhaps give a benefit to the better teams across both leagues. I think that perhaps was the one shame as we got deeper into the tournament, was that, there was... that it was heavily MLS based, and I think perhaps from an entertainment perspective, it perhaps would have been better. You know, if we could have had three or four, Liga MX Meki teams in the, in the quarterfinals, around the semifinals. I mean, just to really, perhaps give it that more of an edge of an MLS versus Liga Meki sort of feel.
Yeah, and some of it, is just a result of the size of the leagues, right? If I recall, the Mexican League is not nearly as populated as the MLS is, especially when you're able to buy franchises and start plopping them whatever you want, San Diego next year or 2 years from now, I think. So it's interesting in that term. And maybe this is, another thought, Is there a way to ensure that some of these Mexican teams, in some way, shape, or form, maybe the top four automatically advance to the next round? I don't know, man. Like, to me, I was very up on the tournament. I think it gave us a lot in terms of, for us, Philadelphia. I know I've been sounding this from the rooftops for a little while. How does Philadelphia move away from Ala Bedoya? This tournament gave us Jesus Bueno, right? This tournament,
I got to say the following. Jesus Bueno has to be one of the biggest revelations out of this League's Cup. I think he played extremely well, and if you're moving away from Ala Bedoya, if you are the Union, I think Jesus Bueno is the way to go. Also, Gazdag had a pretty impressive tournament as well. Yeah. Minus the Miami game, but again, I think he was gassed out at that point.
Well, he had just come back from an injury, but no, I think that's valid, right? I've been talking about how does this marriage end, per se, in terms of Ala Bedoya and the Union, right? How do we successfully move away? And this tournament gave us Jesus Bueno and gave him the opportunity, never mind adding more interest from Jack McGlynn. Also, Gazdag, as you mentioned, obviously a few scares in terms of Carranza and Gazdag with injuries. But nonetheless, I think it gave us a lot of really, really positive things. But I can't help but to feel bad for the Mexican teams that had to... Gosh, the Monterrey guys at this point, with all these air miles, must be able to fly wherever the hell they want, Like,
they've got West Coast, East Coast. Free miles for the next year for Monterrey.
it's bananas. And I sure hope that the organizing group, despite Don Garver's comments earlier this week in terms of, no, I don't believe that games will ever be played in Mexico for Leagues Cup, I hope that that isn't the case. And this is... maybe me having a soft spot for some of these Mexican teams. I'm not from Mexico, but the Querétaro coach was great. I remain smitten by the guy from Monterrey, Fernando Ortiz, who Mario, I don't know if you saw my tweet, but man, the guy walked into the press conference room and shook everybody's hand before he even stepped to the mic, even to the people who are running the dumb electronics in the back, it was amazing. So
I think for me, just the experience, most of the head coaches were really nice. They were really gracious, and they were kind of easy to talk to be honest with you. And we had Pumas here in DC, so we got the chance to talk to Antonio Mohamed, really easy guy to talk to.
Sure.
So It all in all, it was great. Also, I got to interact with some fans after the DC United game against Pumas. They were literally outside of Audi Field on the corner of First and Potomac Avenue, which is the streets nearby DC, nearby Audi Field, if I'm not mistaken.
That's where I was picked up by my Uber at 11 o'clock at night, man. That was scary. Not that it's dangerous, it's just I was really scared I wasn't gonna be able to find an Uber back to Fair Oaks.
Oh, you'll eventually find an Uber back to Fair Oaks.
Also, well, it cost me $70 to try.
Oh yeah, no, you stayed far, sir. Like that Fair Oaks to DC is no joke. You were out there in Northern Virginia, but there are some Pumas fans out there with a speaker, just blasting music and having a party outside the stadium. It was great. There's a guy that was holding a Chucky doll with a Pumas jersey on.
I saw that.
It was wild.
Now,
there's a guy that looked like Peso Pluma, too, that was out there. So it was funny. But at the same time, I was like, this is – if there's anything that I take away from the League's Cup, it's just the atmospheres that they brought to these games.
Yeah.
I think is probably one of the best things about having both leagues play each other. It's just that different kinds of atmospheres and the different kind of people that you get to meet. I think in that aspect, it was a complete success.
I think maybe in an inside baseball view in terms of press, Mario, and I know I share this with you on the phone last night, I'm really going to miss the level of access in terms of press. You know, Dave, I don't know if you logged into the press conference system. Maybe you did. Maybe you didn't during Leagues Cup. Okay.
During Leagues Cup, like I got to like play around with it a little bit.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It's pretty cool the amount of access you got.
Yeah, to be able to hop on any press conference, whether it's a Mexican team, an American team, pre or post, it was just, to me, honestly, I wonder if this is the future of how the league does press. Obviously, they may have to do a little bit more, certifying that people are not just logging in for dumb reasons. But nonetheless, I mean, for me to be able to grab sound bites, which I did the entire tournament, from opposing coaches after their matches, leading into their next match, and then pre-match right before facing us, was unbelievable. So I'm that's probably going to be the biggest piece that I'm going to miss out of this whole thing. And sure, what you mentioned, Mario, is absolutely right. You know, in terms of bringing a different culture, and you know, we didn't win the lottery in terms of when we played Monterrey. I think if it was, let's say, a group game, maybe the fan base for Monterrey, would have been a little bit bigger than it was than a third place game. But we didn't win the lottery in terms of having a Club America or León here, right? Have we had those guys here like we did a couple of years back for the leagues, for the CONCACAF? What is it? The CONCACAF Champions League back then?
Yeah.
Now Camp Champions Cup. I wasn't able to make it at that time, but my understanding is that stadium was very, very yellow when Club America went to Chester. But so I can only imagine what it would look like if we were able to have that type of environment here, and how welcoming it would be.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like Audi Field, DC United hosted Pumas. It was 60-40 Pumas fans, because you got to realize that you mentioned Subaru Park being very yellow with America fans. These are two of the most popular teams in Mexico, so they're going to have a drawing. They're going to draw a crowd either way, because they have fan bases throughout the United States, and they have a big following in Mexico. So it's going to make sense. Like, it's going to make sense that you're going to get more America fans than you're going to get, say, Querétaro and Tijuana fans. And also, I feel like Amtrak should give free mileage to Querétaro for the amount of times they went up in town 95 throughout this tournament.
Yeah, so, that was nuts too.
So yeah, I think that's the interesting part. I think for me, it's just having all the fans there and just have these experiences, and then you get to interact with other media members that you don't get to interact with that often, and just connect with them. That's also probably one of the cooler parts of this tournament as well.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think from a MLS perspective, I think it was quite a fun tournament, I think, especially, you know, being able to see, again, from a human perspective, we got to see what life without Andy Bedoya could be like now, seeing Jesus Bueno emerge, you know, sort of emerge from, not the shadows, but burst onto the scene a bit, although Bedoya scoring two in the semifinals and third place playoff game may earn him another year, you know. Jim Curtin seems to love him, love some Andy Bedoya. But for you, Mario, was there any standouts? Was there any players that caught your eye, or anything that really flashed for DC United that you are looking forward to seeing, or not just in the future, but throughout the rest of the MLS campaign?
For me personally, I think that Christian Dahomey had a pretty solid tournament. I think he also, speaking because they played the Red Bulls last night, it was one of the few bright spots in that game for DC. I think Dahomey stepped out pretty well, but there wasn't anybody that totally stood out. I think the Montreal game was the best game DC United played, that and the Philadelphia game. But other than that, I think Christian Dahomey stood out for me. Christian Benteke had an all right tournament. It wasn't great, but again, he's still a very much a viable attacking threat. So I think at this stretch of the season, Wayne is going to have to find different ways, have different players try to step up throughout the going into the latter stretch of the season.
I think that's a perfect segue maybe to ask the question, right? How do you feel about the rest of the season? You know, we have 11 games left, I think, for the Union, maybe 12. I can't recall. We're definitely up there in terms of yeah. games. And, you know, this is sort of a question that friends of the show, Kyle and Jillian and Almani had asked. And go ahead.
Also, shout out to Michael Barrera saying thanks for joining the show. I'm glad to be here, my man.
But you know, do you remain optimistic? Do you remain hopeful? Worried? How do you feel about this last stretch, especially with everything you know we talked about in terms of minutes on the legs of these players?
It's gonna be interesting. I'm a little hopeful because a good chunk of this, they've got 9 games left of the season.
Okay,
and I think I want to say 60% of it is gonna be played at home. It's gonna be if memory serves me well. But it's gonna take some doing, and it's gonna take for DC United to play lights out at home and win most of the games at home. And they struggled a bit playing in Audi this season. But one of the things I've learned this season from DC United is this is a resilient bunch. Every time they come down, they have they will find some way to come back and bounce back and have a better game than they have. And I think, yeah, it's a setback that you lost to the Red Bulls, but you play them again in 3 weeks. So you kind of get that comeback a little bit, but I'm feeling a little bit optimistic. It's nine games. Obviously Philadelphia has 2 more games in hand. I think the Red Bulls have a game or two in hand, but if they get positive results at home and then sneak a great result on the road, which they've been capable of doing this season, I think DC United has a good chance of making it into the playoffs.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think, of course, I mean, you sort of alluded to, again, that DC have got 9 games left. And I think, again, especially, I think the one thing that has this probably bored to me is saying, I think the hardest thing to do in the MLS is win on the road. You see that teams, you know, the biggest teams, the best teams, they build... You know, they build their playoff campaigns or their support shield attempts by being strong at home, which the Union have been the last 3-4 years, and then being able to pick up results on the road. I mean, for DC as well, I think, again, it's very much two teams, you know, in completely different stratospheres of the league table at the moment. You know, with Union having faint hopes of, you know, trying to catch Cincinnati in the support shield race, whereas, you know, DCR sort of on the coattails at the moment of that sort of like the playoff buy-in or the playoff play-in spots in, I think is it 9th and 10th now?
It's currently in 10th. I think they're 2 points behind the Chicago Fire.
Yeah, yeah.
Weirdly enough, they play Chicago in 2 weeks here at Audi Field. Yeah. So that's going to be a game where must win.
I think I was going to say, yeah, obviously, the top 9, obviously, about 8th and 9th go into that weird new playoff thing, whatever the hell they must introduce at the start of this year to, you know, increase the money they can make through the Apple TV subscriptions. But, I mean, for DC United as well, of course, you know, we're going to look ahead to this weekend a bit, you know, of course, they are playing conveniently, the Philadelphia Union. So, But before they played the Union, of course, as you sort of mentioned last night, the DC United did play a league fixture. They lost 1-0 to the New York Red Bulls. Just give us a little your thoughts of the game. I believe that you weren't. I know you weren't too pleased or best pleased or even better than impressed with what you saw.
The game was abysmal, if you want me to be honest with you. It was a pretty tough watch. I think DC United had some bright spots, but I don't think they had a shot on target, if I'm not mistaken. So the final third, which is something they've struggled with a bit, was off. Like, the finishing in the final third was off. I think Gabriel Pirani came playing last night. I think he did a pretty solid job. He was one of the few bright spots in this game, actually, and he showed some stuff. It wasn't all the way there. Of course, you're going to have some hiccups on your debut, so it's a learning curve. But all in all, I think he played all right. I think giving up the foul to Wilfred Carmona outside the box was terrible, especially considering that the New York Red Bulls like scoring goals in the last 15 minutes of a game, and John Tolkien's deadly off set pieces. So you give them an inch and they'll take it. And that's kind of what happened. But other than that, I think the game itself was scrappy, but not that enjoyable kind of scrappy, if you will. it was bad. I think both teams were very off target. I guess you'd have to weigh it down to just a little bit of rust that they had, given that they hadn't played in 2 or 3 weeks. Both teams sharing the fact that they got eliminated by the Union in the League's Cup. So there's that, but. Yeah, I've seen better DC United New York Red Bulls games. I will say that.
I don't know, Mario.
And also, it just kind of sucks because this was the 100th meeting between both teams.
Oh, wow. I must admit, I left that game. I called you as I was taking out the dog to go to the bathroom before going to bed. And I genuinely wanted my 90 minutes back of my life. Because I can't believe I sat through that. Because it was DC United and Union games have been sometimes great in the past, but more often than not, you get that gritty game that you're talking about, right? Somewhat entertaining, you figure it out, whatever, you can stay.
It's been like that with DC and New York. I think New York has played a lot more of a grittier style as of late. This is more or less going away from the teams that were coached under Jesse Marsh and even Chris Armas or Mike Pecky, because they're a lot more entertaining to watch. And you had players such as Thierry Henry, Kaku, if you remember that guy.
Yeah.
Tim Cahill, just to name a few, that made those games entertaining. But they've become a little more scrappy. And it's become annoying to play the Red Bulls because defensively they will suffocate you. And DC United, I think finds ways to get around that. But I think last night was just a game where it was a little too scrappy for my liking. And all in all, it just wasn't that great.
It really does seem like Troy Lassesse, I think it was his last name. I don't know if I'm saying it correctly. Lassesse, whatever. He's really figured things out over there in terms of defensively, right? I don't want to say that they were ever leaking goals, like it was no one's business, but it seems like ever since Troy took over, it's sort of just really shaped up to be a defensive first team. And obviously that's what we in Philadelphia are. So, you know, it's interesting to see that, you know, that change from them.
Right. But I think with Philadelphia is you're a defensive team, but offensively you guys are really sound, like they're really sound, so they have those attacking options. While as New York, it's just pretty much they're defensive and they're a little bit scrappy, so they can milk out results and just pretty much frustrate the hell out of you. You're playing them.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I mean, of course, like looking at the statistics of the game, having an English manager there, did it sort of feel like Rooney went into the game trying to play for the 0-0 draw and just hoping maybe to try and nick something at the end? Or was it just a case of just both teams perhaps having a clash of styles, which we do see sometimes in Union games, and it's played out and they're just a terrible
It's a little bit of both, actually. I think clash of styles has always been a thing with DC and New York as of late. But I think after a certain period throughout the second half, Wayne Rooney was looking to get a draw out of New Jersey. And I think once Tolkien scored, it kind of just took that away from them. And then it kind of forced them to find that game tying goal, which they couldn't find, unfortunately, after Tolkien had scored with, I want to say, seven with a couple minutes left in the game. So, yeah, I think Wade was playing to get the draw out of New York at some point throughout the second half. It just didn't work out that way.
Yeah, I think as well. I mean, of course, I think Wayne's been in the job for about a year now. Sort of, I think Ratty sort of got the job around this time last season, didn't they? Perhaps three or four weeks earlier, a month earlier than we are now this time last year. I mean, how was the, you know, of course he was a DC, former DC United player. How has this Wayne Rooney era at DC United gone for you so far? And do you think he is perhaps the guy to lead the team, the franchise, to the future, perhaps becoming competitors and, you know, in the Eastern Conference?
DC United late legend, Dave. DC United legend Wayne Rooney, okay?
First off, get it right. You're right about that. it's been interesting. I think last season, by all accounts, nobody's lied about it, was completely and utterly abysmal. They were terrible. I think that he's been able to turn it around in a way where the team has looked pretty solid. I think he still plays that kind of a hybrid high line, and he's got some of the pieces to do it. I think he's now got I think he's someone that could kind of modify a little bit now, considering that you've lost Victor Paulsen through the transfer window earlier in the summer. He went to Belgium, and then you also lose Lewis O'Brien, who was an important cog in your midfield after he decided to go back to Nottingham Forest, or let the loan deal expire with Nottingham Forest. But I think that Wade Rooney is someone that can lead them in the future. I think right now I think more of his thinking, and a lot of the thinking right now, is it's more of a short-term kind of a deal with him. I think he's got another like year with his contract, but I think it's a wait and see game with Wayne if he stays around or not. Mm. But I think he is kind of leading the team in the right direction. Of course, obviously, there you could only go up after finishing dead last season. So having them in the position that they're at now, I think you're doing pretty good. But there's always room for improvement, obviously. But I think he's kind of going in the right direction a little bit.
I'd love to maybe pick your brain for a second, Mario, in terms of, and I hate to bring this up, but I think it's a question in everybody's mind, especially with it being, you know, besides last night's game, maybe the topic of conversation that revolves around DC, everything that happened with Taxi Funtas in terms of, you know, the fan base, right? This is a man who was alleged to have done something very, very bad in terms of a racist remark one time, and then got, I don't want to say away, but got a second life. And now it happened all over again. And to the point where I think it was Pablo Maurer from The Athletic sharing reports that he, being Taxi, went ahead and did his own polygraph test to submit to the team and to the league. I mean, I've never read or thought of a player, or can think of a player, who has gone to those extremes to prove his innocence. And obviously it wasn't enough, as he's, you know, they've mutually, I think, parted ways. So
yeah, they mutually decided to terminate his contract. That one's a tough one, because, well, first off, racism is no joke whatsoever, obviously. Sure. So it's one of those things that you take seriously. With the first time that he got accused of it, the league did say there was some evidence, but they didn't have substantial enough evidence to suspend him. And also, given that DC United decided, hey, we're not going to use you for the last two games of the season, it kind of just giving a self-punishment at that time, I think was more or less what allowed him to come back. This time around, and I've said it before, I've said it on our podcast as well, you did it to a teammate, man. Like, I don't think saying any kind of racial slur to anybody isn't right. But especially if you do it to a teammate, you kind of lose the locker room at that point. And yeah, I think that it was pretty much headed that way at that point, because you figured like once the reports came out of what happened, you kind of figure like you MLS was going to give them a lengthy suspension because they did find it credible. They did find the accusations credible. So whatever is in that investigation was severe enough that they were, if he stayed in the club, he would have gotten at least 10 games, a 10 game suspension out of it at the very least. But because they decided to terminate his contract or mutually part ways, it was just kind of like, all right, we're just going to nip this in the bud. But I think that, yeah, DC United kind of made the right call here in just terminating his contract. It was something that was pretty much was imminent at that point. I think it's kind of funny that he took a polygraph test, though. I never heard that in my life. I was just like, you did a polygraph test to prove your innocence. That's a new one. But no, I think it was just heading that direction at that point. I think that the situation became a little too much for them at that point, and it was only fair that they were going to terminate his contract.
Yeah, you know, the way I see it, and I was very open with you, Mario, while I was in D.C., and obviously in the text messages and conversations we've had, you know, D.C. sort of has a soft spot for me, which may hurt a lot of Philadelphia Union fans who listen to this or watch this, but honestly, to have two MLS legends be both Bolivian and played at that team, it's crazy, you know, so there is certainly a soft spot for me in terms of D.C., but I can't help but to think that it's been wave after wave of bad news for you guys, you know, right? The taxi stuff over the last 2 years. And then also whatever happened, I don't need to get into speculation or whether it was legitimate or not, but was it the one assistant coach during the All-Star game making some sort of gesture during the picture who was just booted out as well. So like, it seems like a lot has happened.
Yeah. So that one, like they found the post on social media. So there was a picture circulating out there, and DC United let him go pretty quickly. And a couple hours later on that Friday, they dropped the whole taxi Nigel Roberta situation where they put him in paid administrative leave. So yeah, that was a pretty interesting like 2 hours on that Friday.
And that's the thing that kills me too. And I'm no PR specialist, Dave. I know you work PR for obviously a soccer club up the gills. But, you know, to put out a press release, and this is what sort of depresses me or makes me really sad and disappointed in terms of DC. And I'm being super transparent with you too, Mario, is that for something this serious, I get that you don't want to hurt the brand, but I feel like it hurts more to have seen these reports go out on a Friday late afternoon, right? Like they're purposely trying to bury it.
I don't know if they were purposely trying to bury it. It's just the way I feel like that was the way it came out.
Sure.
Like that in itself was, I'm fine with that. I just found it funny that they decided to come out, that they released this the day of the League's Cup debut with Messi and the Women's World Cup was going on with U.S. Women's National Team were debuting. That was funny, but I don't think that was the intention. It's just, that's when they had enough to like, all right, let's release the story at that point.
So yeah, it's just unfortunate. The timing just feels a little suspicious. That's all. And I'm not accusing DC United, but from the way I see it and from the way I know that some of these things work, it sort of feels like you put out bad news late on Fridays and you put good news first thing on Mondays, maybe midday on Tuesday, right? To get as many eyes as possible. But listen, some stuff like that, you obviously never want to have to publish at all, period. So it is what it is.
Of course, I think for DC, it's never something you want to publish. But you kind of have to. Like, you got to put out the good stuff, and you also got to put out the ugly stuff as well. So it is what it is. I think for me, I didn't really mind it at all when they dropped it. But I think just getting in front of that was the important part if you're DC United.
Yeah, sure. No, you don't want Pablo Maurer or Tom Boger to, you know, beat you to the punch too far ahead.
No, but again, Pablo Maurer and Tom Boger get paid the big bucks to do this. I just get paid the medium bucks to report. So,
but now, of course, we took some very, somewhat serious issues, you know, surrounding the DC United. But we'll look ahead now to the game this weekend. Of course, Mario, the DC United face the Union. Just from your perspective, what are you hoping that DC United can get out of this game? Of course, I mean, they've got home advantage. They've had the Union's number the last couple of games. I mean, I know they've both ended 0-0, but I mean, they've caused Union issues, and probably both games could probably feel a bit of groove. They couldn't get the job done in 90 minutes.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Again, the only way you can go is up. And considering that DC United got shellacked by a combined score of 13-0 last season, this is much better. But yeah, I think DC United's played extremely well. They've had Philadelphia's number in the two games that they played in Chester this year. I think they were able to neutralize Julian Carranza's on attack. Their midfield hasn't been able to do much. I think defensively, DC United stood tall. And I think it's going to be a game where there's going to be a lot of like testing your mettle or testing your wit at this point, because DC United kind of has Philadelphia's number with the two draws. I think they will go out there a little more confident playing at Audi Field and just trying to prove like, hey, the two negative results from last season were just kind of a fluke and a result of a bad season. We could prove that we could beat one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference in the Philadelphia Union. So I think there's still a lot of things to prove if you're DC United going into this game. But this game should be interesting because it has playoff implications as well. So DC United's hungry to get a positive result against Philadelphia. And if you're Philadelphia, you're kind of looking to come into this game to establish some sort of dominance that you've had playing here at Audi Field in the last couple of seasons. And pretty much just score at this point. I think that's the key here is for both teams to get goals on the board, because the last two games have been two scoreless draws, so both of them have been evenly matched. And I think historically these DC United Philadelphia games tend to be a little bit gritty, even though the last few seasons I think Philadelphia has been the better team out of both of them in the head-to-head series, but it can lead to be a really interesting game.
Dave, you have a better memory than I do, but I can probably count with more than three fingers the number of times, or maybe less, but how many times Cincinnati, New England, et cetera, ahead of us have dropped points, but we also find a way to shit the bed, you know, right? Especially if we think about the supporter shield. So when you talk about incentives for Philadelphia to show up and score and win, it's not often that you see Cincinnati lose. And now you see the news of New England letting Petrovic go for 15, yeah, potentially $17 million. So New England is on their way to, I would guess, with the transfer window at this point for the MLS only allowing them to sign free agents, probably get some older goalkeeper that has, you know, like who has been probably just sitting at home waiting for someone to hire them. So
hey, actually Bill Hamid was recently let go by Memphis, so if you're losing Petrovic, if you're in New England, Bill Hamid is a solid pickup right there.
I just don't know. See, and this is where the MLS rules get tricky, where I think Bill Hamid had to be a free agent by a specific date. Otherwise, he can't be signed. So I can't remember how that all works, but I think that's sort of the gist of it. So nonetheless, a long way to say that the Union have plenty of incentives, especially when you think about the games in hand and facing Cincinnati on September 16th. At Subaru Park. So that could be a 6-point swing there alone in terms of climbing or trying to keep up with Cincinnati, and it's literally catching up to them.
Yeah, I think as well, I mean, of course, the Union now do have a game in hand on Cincinnati as well. You know, Cincinnati have got two big games coming up this weekend. Just before we go back to the Union, I mean, they've got the Open Cup semifinal, I think,
Wednesday.
Is it Wednesday? Sorry.
Against Thursday. The GOAT. The GOAT. Make sure you sign up for the messy newsletter.
I apologize. Wednesday, US time, Thursday, UK time, sorry.
Yes.
I think it kicks off like what, midnight in the UK. Of course they've got a host NYCFC, New York City, who, you know, haven't had the best of seasons, but I mean again, they've got the players that can, you know, string up the results. But I think just going back to the Union, I think it was so important. I know it was a gimme game, I know Monterrey really went into the game not really caring about the result. But I think it was important for the players to somewhat find their mojo again going back into the MLS season. Because I think, you know, the Union looked poor against the Red Bulls. They looked poor against DC United. And again, they looked poor against Querétaro. And they were awful against Miami. And I think, you know, having that full game stretch, I mean, yeah, on paper, you look at it and think, oh, the Union got to the semi-finals. They must have had a good tournament. But on paper, it looks like a solid run. But then you look at the actual games, look at the performances. They lacked any inspiration. It was just a poor going forward. Looked leggy. They looked stretched defensively. The back three just got completely exposed in many instances. Again, I just think winning that gimme game was probably very, very big for the Union coming into this big final stretch of the season where, you know, they've already played the DC United team that's caused them issues, and just hope that perhaps they can find that mojo again and try, you know, try and play with confidence, try and be. And again, this is my biggest issue. Sometimes the Union look like they're playing with shackles. They don't want to take risks. And it does frustrate me, especially on the road as well. Again, Jose's probably heard me say this enough, but I feel like they don't have a player that, you know, can just take the game out of the scruff of the neck and go from point A to point B. I mean, we've seen Jürgen Torres do it a couple of times, and I was quite shocked he didn't get any minutes in the latter stages of the tournament, like meaningful minutes with what he did do. Whereas, I mean, he did show that he could do that in the quarterfinals. But I think going to this game, the Union really needs to just play with some freedom, just look and try and play the way they do, but be, you know, play with some freedom, be creative, try and make things happen. We saw Jose Martinez, you know, go on that really random run where he took the ball from the middle of the field and just sort of did like a massive, like running like a U-shape, just out sprinting like every single like Monterrey player on the field before getting across in the box. And that's something that the Union do lack, is that sort of play. And again, I think I brought attention to it the last couple of weeks, but get players in the box, have players waiting on the edge of the box, get players sprinting, busting the gut to get in there, to get in the end, because the amount of good balls the Union have put in the box over the last few games, and it happened against DC as well, on many instances, and there's just no one there. Like, you play a ball towards the back post, and mm-hmm. you've got Mikel Uar or Carranza just stood on the opposite side of the six-yard box. It's like, well, you're no use there. Like, where's your strike partner? Like, there were just things going into this game that the Union can definitely take advantage of. It's just whether they can actually do so. And I think, again, they've seen the way that DC have somewhat perhaps shackled them, and they've, you know, they've caused them issues going forward and attacking defensively. It's just there should be a blueprint or a game plan there of how to try and counteract it.
You're asking a lot out of a Philadelphia Union team away from home to be creative and play with freedom, when in reality, you know what's going to happen. It's going to be a back four, maybe a back five. You know, like, it's going to be all but, especially with the way that these games have gone against DC, especially at Audi Field. So, Mari, what do you think is going to happen this weekend?
Well, I mean, given how these games have played out, I think DC United could be capable of getting a win. I believe that if they give the Union backline enough fits, they can get a positive result out of this. But there's also a very good and distinct possibility that you're going to come out with another goddamn draw. So, anything's up for grabs at this point. So it's going to be a wait and see. The fan in me says, get a W. Kind of more of the reporter in me is going like, this could be a draw.
You just want this to be more exciting than what you witnessed against New York, right? To at least,
oh yeah, like very your much, article very is better. Much so. Yes, very much so. Very much so. And again, Philadelphia and DC United have had really interesting games. One of the games I remember thoroughly, weirdly enough, was also a draw. Was back in 2012, back when they played at old RFK Stadium.
Yep.
It was hot outside. It was like, oh, trillion degrees out there. It was a hot August day. Both teams ended up with a draw. I think DC United ended up with 9 men. Philadelphia ended up with 10. Nobody was happy with the referee, because I think the referee was Mark Geiger that game. He made some questionable calls. And DC United had a chance to take the lead late with Dwayne De Rosario. It was a 1-1 draw. I don't remember who scored for each team in that game, but D-Row had a chance to to get a game-winning penalty. He scores it. Mark Geyer calls it back for encroachment. He misses. Not only that, there is a melee in the middle of the field at that point. Bronco Boscovich, who was a midfielder for DC United, gets a red card. People were wondering, because they didn't show it on the broadcast, they're like, what did he get a red card for? He got a red card for putting a Philadelphia Union player, Roger Torres to be exact, in a headlock. He put the man in a headlock in the box right in front of Mark Geyer.
You talk about dynamic players, Dave. We could use a Roger Torres around here.
So he puts Roger Torres in a headlock. They go back to take the penalty, and Dero, I think Zach McMath saves it or Dero skies it. But it was bad. Even the family section got into it with Mark Geyer and RFK at the end of the game. So both sets of fans were not too pleased with him at the end of the game. Also, I met Shado Williams' father outside of RFK at the end of that game.
Wow, look at you shaking, rubbing elbows with the fancy people. That's awesome, Mario.
I know,
man. That's a memory for sure.
It's not a great memory, but it's a memory nevertheless.
I never said it was great. It's a memory. That's all it memory. Is.
Also, Freddie Adu was here for that game, so he was playing with the Union at the time.
Yes. Oh my God. Those are Vincent Nogueira. Oh man, that Union roster used to be something to be afraid of in terms of like fans. Like it was a very hard team to get behind because it was just such an odd roster. Those were the days when we would still sign big names just to try to put butts on seats. And now I don't know that Freddie Adu is the one. What's that?
Rice and Bully would
come to mind. Yeah, and Bully comes to mind. Mondragon. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, Richie. Yeah, Torres. Oh, Richie Marquez. That's another one. And obviously those were more of, you know, like homegrowns in a way. But the Farfan twins. Oh, my gosh. Those were interesting years of the Union. We've come a long way, Dave. That's for sure.
Yeah. I think, yeah, of course. I mean, again, you sort of looking back at this rivalry. And I mean, the Union have got some hot-headed players, so I'm sure. I mean, we've seen it this season already. I mean, Jose Martinez is always a hot-headed player, and I'm sure. And Mario, I mean, you've obviously seen Jose Martinez not just play against DC, but I'm sure you've seen highlights of him in other games. He can cause trouble, and fingers crossed he doesn't get into it this weekend. I mean, Jesus Bueno, another player who, not quite sure, was a headlock. I think, didn't he chuck someone to the floor, Jose, when he got sent off in Colorado?
I think so. It was something. It was odd because I was surprised they even showed it on the broadcast because I think they tried to not show stuff like that, but I think that they needed to.
No, I don't think they try to show any of that kind of stuff in the broadcast at all. That's why I bring back the Bronco Boscovich Roger Torres headlock, which was 8-on-8 violence, by the way, because both of them wore number 8. But yeah, they're trying not to show that. I think with DC, this is going to be another game where Gabriel Pirani is going to try to prove himself, and he's going to be playing in front of the home fans. So it'll be interesting to see if Wayne plays him in the starting lineup. You get Matias Klick back from suspension, and he's a guy that could turn the game around for DC United. Obviously, connecting with Benteke. I know Ruan started. You could see Andy Nahar starting as well, depending on his fitness coming into this game. So it should be interesting to see what Wayne Rooney's going to put out there. But I think he's going to put a pretty competitive starting 11 going into this game.
Yeah, of course. I mean, as you sort of said, you're hoping to see a competitive 11. I mean, Klick coming back is obviously a massive X factor for DC. I mean, you know, very, very good midfielder. But, you know, can influence a game. We've seen that in the Premier League with Leeds and the massive influence he had when helping them get into the Premier League and Championship. But for you looking at the game on Saturday, I mean, give us your score prediction. Of course, it's going to be another interesting game, I think, of course. I mean, Wayne Rooney, I'm sure, will be hoping that his side can replicate what they had done in the previous two games, but with perhaps a goal as opposed to just a boring 0-0.
Right. So I guess I'll give you two predictions. I'll give you the fan prediction. I think it's going to be DC United is going to win 2-1. That's going to be my fan prediction. I don't think it's going to be a 7-0 drubbing. Those are pretty far in between. But I think given how these games have been played this season, 2-1 draw. My second prediction, I'm going to say it's going to be a 1-1 draw. That'd be my second prediction going into this. I think both teams have been evenly matched throughout the season. And so I wouldn't be surprised if if each walk out with a point from Audi Field.
It's like, who do you think will be the scorer for DC United? We see Christian Benteke finally hit the back of the net, having come so close in the previous two fixtures.
Yeah, so Christian Benteke will be my scorer. I think that's a shoo-in. Second goal? You know what? I'm going to go off a limb here. If he's healthy to play, well, actually, Steve Birnbaum. We'll go with Steve Birnbaum scoring the airy game-winning goal from a set piece off a corner kick.
Oh, Mario, you're too much, man. We'll see what happens.
So, Jose, for you, how do you see the game going on Saturday?
I think this is going to be a tight one again. Obviously, we have a lot of evidence to sort of predict that it's going to continue to be tight, especially with the Union away from home, which I have very little confidence on us getting a win away from home. You eventually have to. But I think it'll be a 1-0 win by the Union. And I think that after his flawless substitute appearance by Ty Baribo, I think he will probably come in at some point in the second half to score his first goal for the Philadelphia Union in some way, shape, or form. I really do believe that he'll be a difference maker here in this squad, especially with the unpredictability that we've gotten from Mikel Ua, especially this season, and maybe going back up to last year in a way too. So it'll be interesting to see how he fits in, especially with that, you know, Jim's comments that we only go as far as our strikers and Daniel Gazdag. So to add another body that's not Carranza or Ua, and we can finally feel a little bit better that the first sub into the striking core is not, you know, Chris Donovan, the pride of Drexel. That's no disrespect to him, just being very, very open that, you know, Chris Donovan, I always go back to this image that's like seared into my brain, Mario, of MLS Cup last year. Substitutes, you have Bale on one end, and then you have Chris Donovan coming in for the Philadelphia Union. It's like that's like a dichotomy of like two completely different teams and the way that they're run. So to not have a Chris Donovan be the first body up for those strikers is I think a big, big difference for this team. So we'll see what happens. But hey, our other co-host has his prediction, and Mike Barrera says that it'll be 2-1 for DC. Unfortunately, I think that at their home and after our long stretch of play, the Union lose this one. So we'll see. You know, Jim was also very, very, very open to say this is going to be one of our few stretches where we actually get a few days off leading into a match, especially with having to reschedule the August 20th FC Dallas match now becoming a midweek match. So we go at a quick rate here. But also, I think we do well when we are going at a quick clip. So we'll see. Let's see what happens this weekend. Really, really exciting matchup. And I really hope to be there, Mario, and be able to obviously say hello to you and just see the Union fans that travel very well to D.C.
Of course, a two-hour ride. I expect you to travel well down to D.C.
I mean, yeah, it would be a poor effort if we don't see at least a couple of thousand, perhaps, Union fans invade D.C., you know, get into the stadium. For me, a prediction, I'm perhaps slightly more confident than I should be. Probably I'm going to go.
Maybe don't say it.
So 2-1 to the Union. I just think, again, with the added firepower up front now, I mean, again, hopefully not having to rely on Chris Donovan, although, I mean, I put money on it on the hour mark when Mikel Ua inevitably comes off for Chris Donovan. You know, he played the full 90 minutes on Saturday night. So, I mean, it clearly isn't a fitness issue or thing. It's a decision. Jim Curtin quite literally could be the Unai Emery of the MLS, where he actually has to plan his substitutions. And they have to come at specific minutes, because it's an issue that I've been raising on the podcast about Mikel Ua, who is obviously who was the big money signing last year, designated player. He doesn't play more than 60, 65 minutes. And then people get annoyed when Ua isn't playing in the crunch minutes when, you know, you rely on your big money strikers to score goals. It's sort of like, well, if he's playing in the first 60 minutes, but then he's not been given more of a chance when the game is more stretched, like, what do you expect? And it's just, for me, just sort of setting him up to fail. But I think, you know, he scored, I think, I don't know if Carranza will be back yet.
He is. Jim confirmed that Carranza will be available. Whether he starts or not, that's a different question, but he will certainly be available. He stressed it many times in the press conference. Maybe I hit a soft spot in terms of asking Jim for an update on Carranza after the Miami game, but it sounds like he is good to go, and the only reason he was dressed for the Miami game was on a crazy circumstance that the Union needed to go into PKs, and they needed a late sub to maybe take out a defender and put a striker in going into a PK shootout with Miami, which obviously was nowhere near that. Oh, we have a prediction here.
Nope.
3-1 Union from Jillian, the one team we agree on. She's a co-host with her husband, and she says that Carranza is going to remember how to score. Baribo gonna make it. He's gonna make an impact, and she believes that she will be there, or she knows she will be there, and she believes that a lot of Union fans will be there. And listen, I hope to be there. Obviously, with two kids, it makes it a little bit more difficult in trying to figure out how to get there. And some of my, I think my one cousin's able to meet me there. He'll be in the area, so we'll see how many show up, and I hope that many of us and are as confident as Jillian and Dave are, but obviously it's a tall task.
Well, I mean, ahead. Say, Jose, I think, as you mentioned, sort of the first put of call of the striking options not being Chris Donovan, I mean, with Carranza possibly not starting the game, and, you know, Quinn Sullivan's somewhat the lack of Quinn Sullivan, you know, getting consistent minutes from the off. Could very well see Chris Donovan start, although I'd be disappointed if Jim does change what was a winning lineup from Saturday.
Yeah, I'm intrigued onto what this lineup looks like, and I don't want to get into predicting it just because we're coming off of an international tournament, played against three-digit jerseys in terms of Monterrey, so it's hard to gauge what type of fitness work that was. 90 minutes against, I think at all times, I think it was at least three or four triple-digit jerseys, academy kids trying to prove themselves to Ortiz and Monterrey. But
wait, what's wrong with playing playing against a kid with the number 295 on his back?
Well, it's not as powerful as the seven, but certainly 207 made a mark in my brain. But hey, listen, I wonder. I really do wonder. I don't know that Ty is ready. We'll learn more on Friday during the usual press conference. But at the very least, it's nice to have another option that can help provide. Because, you know, if somehow Chris Donovan goes injured and we have Carranza out with a little bit of an injury as well, who do we go to then, right? Sullivan? And then we're really getting into the deep end of what the hell does this Union team do?
Raffinello,
another option, obviously having a great season with the Union too, but I just don't know that he is quite there yet. But Dave, you want to wrap us up as we sort of exit here and say thank you to Mario?
Yeah. So say, Mario, got any final thoughts before we begin wrapping up the show?
No, outside that this game's going to be entertaining, but I can decide. Well, actually, I do have a question, though. That MLS Cup game, what were your reactions once Gareth Bale tied the game late in overtime? I don't want to be that person, but I kind of have to ask this question.
Well, I encourage anybody, before we answer, I encourage anybody who's watching to maybe drop their answer in the chat, and I'll put it up on the screen as well, but I'll let Dave answer first, as obviously he was further away from the United States where it was all happening.
So funny enough, I was traveling back from AFC Fields, so equivalent of like an 8-hour, 9-hour drive with Gillingham that day, so I have to watch the game in the car. And so I was watching the game in the car on the way back, and obviously the Bale goal went in. I think I was about an hour away, half an hour away, and just you know, head sunk. And I thought, for Christ's sake, they're going to lose some penalties, aren't they? You just sort of had that feeling when Bale, which, you know what I mean, like, again, like you sort of say, like, you know, the Union traveling 2 hours to go, Union going for a 2-hour drive to DC, like, I had an 8-hour journey that day, you know, about 8-hour journey coming back from Fylde, an 16-hour round trip, 18 hours depending on the traffic. But like, yeah, it was the worst possible way to round off a very, very long day. That was, and you just sort of had that feeling going into penalties that it wasn't going to go their way, especially with, you know, LA having 10 men.
Yeah, I'll let Jillian go. She just answered. She was actually in LA for it. She died inside after a brief moment of indescribable joy when Jack put us ahead. And I think I can probably use that same answer. I was standing here in my living room right now. We were dog less at the time, but I was holding my, at the time, he might have been what, 7 months old, 7 month old in my arms. And my youngest, who wasn't, he had just turned three not too long ago, for that match, just watching. And I was genuinely tearing up in joy, you know, like, this is finally happening. We're going to get that star on the crest. And just thinking to myself, well, that's a dumb way to give a corner, and, you know, or whatever happened.
I think it was a cross from Cifuentes coming up to right hand side.
Yeah, so that was a dumb way. You know, like, was it? It was on Mbizo too, if I remember. So it was sort of like, this is what are we doing? Like, this is terrible defense. What's going on? And seeing that header go in, I just sort of like, I was so deflated that I actually said to my wife, this is the most Union way to lose anything. And, you know, we've been through U.S. Open Cup losses that, you know, very different rosters that had no business being in U.S. Open finals, Open Cup finals. So to have seen this I wasn't there like Jillian, but to have watched this through my television and just sort of thinking like, man, this is the most Philadelphia way to lose it. And you know, what can you do? Different approaches to the roster build, but nonetheless, it was tough. And we also have Mike Barrera. It was like someone put my soul in a car and drove it off the Commodore Barry Bridge into a river full of sharks dressed in LAFC jerseys. And that's probably accurate, because Mike was actually in the stadium. The stadium was opened up for a watch party. They put it on the big video board. And I can't imagine the silence in that crowd that day, especially at that moment. But listen, all we can look for here and, you know, look ahead to is hopefully having a solid playoff run, despite having so many minutes underneath some of these players' feet. Obviously, the playoffs being expanded this year to last from, I think, late October through December 9th for the final match of the regular MLS season. But Dave, fair for me to give my final thoughts before we go?
Oh, yeah.
I just want to say thank you to Mario for joining us, but also thank you to everybody who sort of followed my content during Leagues Cup. I remain very, very proud to be one of the only, if not the only, Spanish-speaking reporter in that press room week in and week out, and during Leagues Cup was able to really share more of the stories of the Liga MX teams and their players. So it was really rewarding to do that, but also sort of set me off in a mission, I guess, per se, of like, you know, goal wise to hopefully next year do some Copa America games and certainly find my way in a couple of years to cover the World Cup, whether it's independent in terms of an outlet or for somebody on assignment. I don't care. I just want to be there as much as I can. So it's been a lot of fun to see people interact on Reddit, on Twitter, Facebook, et cetera. I can't thank all of you enough for engaging with that stuff. And I hope you enjoyed it. I like to think that I provided enough variety for everybody to enjoy, but I think it's been eye-opening to see, and this might get me in a little bit of hot water, but to see the lack of attention to the Spanish speaking contingency of the Philadelphia Union in terms of the big outlets. And it's been fun to sort of take that charge on.
Oh yeah. I mean, again, of course, I mean, it's a shit. I mean, it's a fun tournament that's now coming to an end. We're getting back into the, you know, into the gritty, you know, the slog of the MLS season, which, I mean, again, with what's like 30 teams in the league now, it's just getting ridiculous, but you know, we're getting back into that good fun, you know, the less exciting stuff, you know, where, you know, the teams do draw, and, you know, I know how much Americans, you guys in the North American region hate draws.
Listen, Mario and I were texting each other. Last night's game would have been prime for a penalty shootout if it wasn't for that Tolkien goal towards the end.
You know, I thought the game was going to end 0-0 at some point. I was just like, I had no faith that anybody was going to shoot on target at some point, even though DC United had some opportunities to get a goal. It just wasn't going their way. So I was like, damn it, Tolkien scored again. But here we are.
Dave, take us home.
Yeah. Now, just before we close off, go through the sponsors quickly. Apologize for any botching up of this, because I'm like, US addresses just completely confused me. But the first one is Allstate Insurance Agency, which can be found in the 6750 Iroquois Trail. I believe it's the third building in the area with Allentown, PA, specializing in insurance.
Sorry to interrupt, but that's the third sponsor from the same address or like the same street. That's awesome.
Yeah. They specialize in insurance, auto, home, renters, life, and much more. Get a quote today by calling 610-395-6100. Vinny's Pizza, also found at 6750 Iroquois Trail. I believe that number seven. I believe that's probably the number of. Don't have no idea, but in Allentown, PA one, the zip code 18104. Discover a new favorite by trying the top pizzas in Allentown, plus pasta, salads, calzones, sandwiches, and much more. Check out the menu for the daily and game day specials at Vinny's Pizza Restaurant.com. Stuffs to the Grills, the next one. Again, 6750 Iroquois Trail in Allentown, PA. They're offering a unique twist on traditional sandwich shop. Homemade hot and cold sandwiches, salads, appetizers, and baked goods available for catering, events, family functions, and much more. Check out their menu and their daily slash weekly specials at stufftothegrills.com. Also, check out Manscaped and get 20% off using the code AATSports at manscaped.com. And, of course, our final sponsor is Philly Sports Trips. Join us in New York or Washington. Secure your spot at phillysportstrips.com and select Allentown Pickup at checkout to go watch the Eagles play later this year. And of course, thank you all for tuning in, listening this evening. And we look hopefully we have a positive result to come to bring you next Monday.
Hey, no worries. Maybe next episode you guys are wallowing in sadness once this is all said and done on Monday. Yeah. On Monday night.
I mean, we still haven't addressed the Inter Miami game in proper depth yet. So I mean, it could be two buckets of tears.
No, we don't have to.
I have a lot I want to say.
I think the Miami game is pretty self-explanatory. You guys got invested from like 30 yards out. So
I have a lot I want to moan about.
We can talk about it when Mike's here. But for now, Mario, again, thank you so much. Dave, great job hosting today.
Thank you for having me.
No, of course. I've been very open. Hosting's not my thing. So, Dave, thank you so much. And everybody, will see you hopefully at Audi Field this weekend. Is it a 7:30 kickoff, right?
7:30 kickoff at Audi Field on Saturday night.
Awesome. Apple TV or MLS, whatever season pass. And certainly if you're in the area and you see me or anybody wearing a Union jersey, make sure you say hello and have fun. All right. Good night, guys.
Night.
Night.